Hello and welcome to the very last edition of the Women's Soccer Zone podcast. My name is Kieran Tavam and as always I'm joined by my buddy from across the pond, JJ Duke. JJ, last time we will be doing this, mate. It's mixed emotions, would you say?
Yeah, I'd say mixed emotions. It's been a while that we've done one of these episodes, but I think it was right for us to kind of clear our heads a little bit, because knowing if we probably did a podcast immediately after, or our last podcast immediately after we announced, we would probably be a little bit more pessimistic. But look, at you know, this show, we're going to talk about some current trends, but we're going to also look back at some of our more fondest moments. And I think that's really, Kieran, what you and I over the last couple of weeks have kind of gone towards. We're, you know, it sucks that we're not doing this anymore, but we're trying to look at this as, you know, what did we enjoy about doing this and what can we look forward to in the future?
Yeah, 100%. Couldn't agree more. I think we'll reminisce a little bit. We got some questions that came in on social media that we requested to see if anyone had anything they wanted to ask about our time doing the podcast and covering women's football over the last 5 years. And we got a few in, so we'll go through them. But you know, this wouldn't be the normal podcast if we didn't do a little bit of newsy stuff. And there's been a few things that have happened over the last few days. I think we could even go as far back. So looking at the most recent, you've got to talk about the restructuring of the Women's Super League and actually the restructuring of the pyramid of English football. We were talking about it, I think, over the course of the last few months when it was announced last September that the Women's Super League, the women's newly formed Women's Championship and the Women's National League, which is the third tier, would be formed. And we now know which teams are going to be participating. And JJ, as a Manchester United fan, I'm sure that you're pleased to have it confirmed that Manchester United will be playing second tier football. And we believe, although it's not confirmed yet, that Casey Stoney will be the head coach of that team.
Well, I mean, obviously, I'm delighted. Obviously, also at the same time, it's been way too freaking long that this has not happened when you have really one of the giants in the world in terms of men's football not having a women's team. They had the money for years, but it's about time that they put together a senior team. And I think, you know, it was fair to the FA not just jumping them straight into the first division. They have to kind of form this identity of themselves, of what their team is going to look like and, you know, how they're going to be represented on the field. It's going to be interesting to see what type of team they put together. If Casey Stoney ends up being the manager of the side, obviously that's a huge get to begin with. And then how many people truthfully would turn down the opportunity to wear a Manchester United shirt as their profession? I would think that, you know, despite not being in that first division, still in the second division, I bet there's going to be a lot of players pining for the opportunity to put on the red and, you know, put on a good performance that could not only help their career, but really boost the brand.
Yeah, and I think what's important to mention is that we won't go into the kind of specifics of how each team was able to get into the division that they were in, but Manchester United didn't apply for the top tier. Manchester United applied for the Women's Championship for the very reasons that you said, that they want to establish themselves, they need to build a team because they don't even have one at the moment, and they've got a couple of months to do that. What Manchester United will do is they will offer a professional environment in that second tier. Now, teams in the second tier only have to offer a minimum of 8 hours training time per week. The clubs in the top tier, so your Arsenals, your Chelseas, your Liverpools, they will offer a minimum of 16 hours a week. Now, I can almost guarantee that Manchester United are not going into that second tier looking to offer 8 hours of training time. They are looking probably to replicate what the first division teams are doing, and they will offer a minimum of 16 hours, which will attract players, as you say. Now, it may well be that some players will drop out of the top division to go and play for Manchester United. I'm sure they will look at the short-term loss of playing a second tier season for the long-term gain of potentially being in the top division with a club like Manchester United. There are a number of players that have been linked with the club already. As we say, if Casey Stoney does take that role on, she will have the pulling power to be able to attract some really good players as well. I think there's only going to be good things happening for Manchester United, and I understand from the reaction that it's people have got mixed emotions about them being a team in the second tier and being offered that chance from coming from nowhere. The reality is that a club like Manchester United are going to attract attention, and we need more attention on the women's game in this country. And I feel terrible for some of those clubs that didn't get a place in the second tier. One of them was my own club, Watford. You know, for reasons that I won't go into, they have missed out on an opportunity. They will be playing third team or third tier football next season. So Manchester United have taken the place of a more established women's team in the second tier, but ultimately they are not going to be in that tier for very long. And if they do get promoted, they will be joining West Ham United ladies, who were given a place in the top division, being promoted from the third tier of English football. And on the day of recording, JJ, someone we both know very well, has been appointed as their head coach because Matt Beard has gone to West Ham. That is a shrewd appointment for them, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, not the ideal way that his 2018 wanted to start, where, you know, he had a club going into the calendar year, he drafted, and then all of a sudden the Boston Breakers. Does it seem like a while ago that it was the Boston Breakers were a thing? It still kind of... involved with that, and my understanding is people are just starting to get their ticket refunds for that, but that's a story for another time. But yeah, I mean, this is a guy that's passionate about what he does. He wants to get the best out of his players. Obviously, he's had success in this league with Liverpool in the past, which, you know, that performance got him an opportunity in the U.S. Let's face it, things didn't really work out the way that he would have liked, but I think it's the right thing to do for West Ham to get him back on your side of the pond, if you will, and give them an opportunity in the top division, really mold that unit. And I know you probably know him. Well, you know him a little bit better than I do, but I think would there have been another better candidate? I don't think so.
Not really. Not that I can think of off the top of my head. I think Matt knows this division very well. He will no doubt have a list of players as long as his arm that he wants to bring into the club. The reality is that he's inherited a team that has been playing third tier football. I think they finished seventh in the FA Women's Premier League, which is, as I say, two divisions below the Women's Super League. So he's got some building to do. But then he did the same at Liverpool when he inherited his Liverpool team. They were a side that had finished bottom the previous season. He completely overhauled the squad and he took them to a league title. In fact, he took them to two league titles. So he's used to this. He's used to rebuilding. And the fact that he has a top division club that will be offering a professional environment, he will have no problem attracting players. There are a number of individuals that I've heard linked with the club already. And if he can get those players that are being linked, they will certainly be able to... I don't think they'll be pushing for the title. There's no reason why West Ham can't be finishing middle of that division. But a shrewd appointment, and I do genuinely wish Matt the best there, because he had a torrid time in Boston for reasons that we all know that were very public. But any others from your end that kind of stood out for you, JJ? There's obviously a bit of change. We've got Sheffield United ladies coming into the Women's Championship, which is great for them. Lewis ladies, who are, or Lewis women, the only club that offer equal pay for their men and their women's team, so they are a popular addition to the second tier of English football. But anything else that stood out for you, mate?
Well, I think also obviously Leicester getting a spot for their women's side in the second division, that helps. But it's really curious to see how this Sunderland situation is going to unfold over the next couple of days. Obviously not awarded a spot within the top two tiers. You know, they've gone through some really troubling times over the last 18 months or so, but I'm really curious to see what's going to happen, because I know, Kieran, you being over there, this is not going to be a fight that's going to end quickly. This might be something that's going to be drawn out for a while.
Yeah, without doubt. I mean, that was probably the major surprise that we got from the announcement last week, and horrible situation for Sunderland to be in. You know, they are without question the focal point of women's football in the northeast of England. You know, they have for years been recognised for the achievements that they've had, but more importantly for them, the development of local talent. You know, you look at the current England Lionesses squad, you have Steph Horton, Jordan Nobbs, Carly Telford, Lucy Bronze, Lucy Staniforth, who's currently just been brought into the squad. You know, there's more than just those that I've mentioned. Jill Scott is another one. They all came through the system at Sunderland. And now you've got a situation where there is no club from the North East that are going to be in the top two tiers of English football, which means any young woman or any young girl that goes through that system at Sunderland, when they get to the age of 16, much like has been for the case for the girls at Manchester United, they get to 16 and then there's no top club for them. Well, there's been no club at Manchester United for them to go into, but at Sunderland, they will come through that system and they will essentially, as it stands, be entering a third tier football club. So there are suggestions, or the club have already said that they're going to appeal the decision. What the basis of that appeal will form, I've no idea, because clearly their bid was not up to scratch. But I really do hope that they can resolve something, because Sunderland belong in my view, they belong in the top division. But if they're not going to be in the top division, they need to be in the second division. And I really hope that they can resolve it.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you mentioned that fact about, you know, for Manchester United, when they had their youth community academy, if you will, well, when the players turned 16, it's not like they had to drive, you know, 50 miles or something like that to find the local club. You got a number of teams in very short proximity where you can go to. You talk about the northeast of England. I mean, what exactly would be the closest, if it was, you know, the Super League and the Championship right now, what would actually be the closest geographical club for a young player out of, you know, Sunderland or Newcastle type area?
Well, I mean, the Durham are in the second tier, so I should correct myself. You have got Durham Women FC who are going to be in the second tier, but with the absolute greatest respect to Durham, they do not have the history or the facilities to be able to offer a player what the likes of Sunderland have been able to in the past. So they would be able to go to Durham and play in the second tier. But if they want to play for a top tier club, the only other northern club based clubs are your Manchester United's, your Liverpool's and your Everton's. So it's a long old drive, a long old trek to try and play top tier football if you're in the northeast with no Sunderland in the top two tiers as it stands. So hopefully they will be able to resolve that, and we see Sunderland given a bit of a lifeline, because they don't belong in the third tier, that's for sure. But I guess we should probably move on, mate. You know, there's been plenty going on over the last month, 6 weeks since we did our last show. I was in Ukraine for the UEFA Women's Champions League, and the game was, well, we should talk about the extra time period, mate, because it was probably the craziest 15 minutes I've seen, other than Carly Lloyd's hat-trick in the World Cup final 3 years ago. But of course, Lyon won the Champions League final in Kiev 4-1. The game ended 0-0 after 90 minutes. If you were to ask someone what their one word kind of observation of the 90 minutes was, they would probably say uneventful. And then we get this crazy period of 15 minutes in extra time where Pernilla Harder gives Wolfsburg the lead, 5 minutes into extra time. Then Alexandra Popp gets herself stupidly sent off within a couple of minutes. And then Lyon just run absolutely riot and score 3 times in 5 minutes, and then add a fourth, in the second half of extra time through Camille Abeli. I mean, absolutely insane, wasn't it?
I mean, here, I'll kind of set... You were obviously in the Ukraine. Here's where I am. So I'm at work, right? I work at MLB.com. That's Major League Baseball's website. I have the stream, because it's on YouTube here in the U.S., so I have it in like a small corner as I'm working. And a couple of people that are on my floor are, you know, avid soccer fans and actually do know what's going on. Obviously, when you talk about Champions League final, you obviously know what the top women's teams are, and they're kind of asking, hey, what's going on over there? So, you know, I'm saying nothing happens, and all of a sudden, my assignment that I'm working for work picks up. I see that Pernilla Harder scores. 5 minutes later, I look down from my assignment. I already see it's 3-1 Lyon. I'm like, what the hell just happened? So I had to backtrack everything to watch what happened. Then all of a sudden, I find out the fourth goal was scored. And I'm like, man, this is insane. I mean, that's for me watching on a little monitor. I give credit to the crowd there. It, you know, it wasn't the biggest of venues, but it seemed like they were into it for the most part, but like a politely into it. As you said, it was a pretty uneventful 90 minutes, and then all of a sudden it just kept growing and growing and growing as things started happening. The extra time, you just wish that the extra time, that 30-minute period, emulated and, you know, multiplied itself by three, and that was the 90 minutes.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. I think going to the, talking about the crowd, that stadium was the Dynamo Kiev Stadium. Holds about 17,000 to 18,000 people capacity. There was just over 14,000. I thought that was a really good crowd, actually, because I said to other journalists that were there, if they get over 10,000, they'll have done well, because Ukraine is not necessarily known for its women's football. Okay, it's got a national team which has never qualified for a major tournament, but I genuinely did not know what sort of response we would get in the Ukraine. And actually, do you know what? A lot of people turned up, and it was a strange atmosphere because obviously the vast majority of those were neutrals who were just there to watch the match. They weren't necessarily supporting one team or the other. But that extra time period was absolutely crazy. I've not seen anything like it. And it really did turn on Alexandra Popp's red card. What she was thinking by diving in on Delphine Cascarino like that, I will not know. If anyone's not seen it, I'm sure it's on YouTube. You can see the highlights. But that is very, very difficult for a side to play 10 against 11 against a side like Lyon, who are so good at keeping the ball. It's hard enough 11 v 11. And then you had the situation with Amandine Henry scoring a beautiful strike, and then Eugenie Le Sommer almost instantly after that. And then a few minutes later, Ada Hegerberg adds one and becomes the record goal scorer in the Champions League with her 15th goal. And then to add icing on the cake, you had Camille Abeli, who I found it hard when Kelly Smith retired. I found it hard when Lauren Holiday retired. I find it equally as hard that we're not going to see Camille Abeli on a football pitch anymore, mate, because she is a joy, and I was delighted for her to get on the score sheet right at the end.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as journalists, right, we're not supposed to play quote-unquote favorites, but there are, as you, that list that you said, those are players that you want to have them succeed in. Really, not just their last match, but the way that they carry themselves on the field with, you know, this certain style of class and dignity. And, you know, they always say, what, you know, the players who play the right way. You don't even have to really ever watch them before. All you have to do is take a look and you say, wow, you know what? That person represents not only the right way that you have, how you're supposed to play the sport, but how you're supposed to, you know, act on and off the field. And Camille Abeli, I don't know if I've ever really seen her. Well, okay, I've seen her be upset on the field before, but I've never seen her, you know, get down in a moment or, you know, get angry. There's always some sort of like positivity that comes out of her, and you're right. You know, it was the true icing on the cake for her career, and it's obviously a little disappointing that, you know, we won't get to see any more of her, especially, you know, with the World Cup being in France next year. But, yeah, that was the right way. That's the right way for her career to end out.
Yeah, the sad thing is that she's still good enough to play for France as well.
So very true.
She probably would have been in the French World Cup squad next year, but unfortunately we're not going to see her. But I managed to speak to her after the game, and you know, she was very appreciative of the situation that she's in, but maintained that it was the right thing to do. But she did say that she's looking to go into coaching. We'll start with younger teams, so we may well see Camille Abeli as the head coach of a professional team sometime in the future, and let's hope that happens. But wonderful player, just calm on the ball, can pick a pass, can shoot from range, good from set pieces, definitely one of the best midfielders in the world in the time that I've watched the game, and she will be sorely missed. But as we mentioned, Lyon won their third Women's Champions League title in a row. I think it was their fifth in total. They have dominated European football this decade, there is no doubt about that. But they didn't dominate the French Cup final because, well, a game that turned into a little bit of a farce was actually won by Paris Saint-Germain. They won 1-0 down in Strasbourg last week. And Marie-Antoinette Katoto, a player that I think has got a massive future ahead of her, will be a star at the World Cup next year. I've got no doubt about that. She scored the goal that won the game for PSG. But I don't know if you saw it, JJ. It was completely overshadowed by a massive thunderstorm that hit the game, and the players had to be hauled off the field. There was a big delay, and then when the referee asked them to come back on, the PSG players all ran on, because obviously they're 1-0 up. But you had Reynald Pedros, the Lyon head coach, and Jean-Michel Aulas, the president of Lyon, essentially refusing to let their players go back. So you had the situation where you had one team warming up on the field and another one in the locker room, which was an absolute joke.
I mean, that's isn't that a little ironic, right? Because if you're the team that's leading, especially against a team like Lyon, the last thing you're saying, no, just call it up, right? We're done. We give us the win. We have it. No, that's the I did not see that. Unfortunately, I'll have to go back and look that one up. But yeah, is it me or has this year kind of been a little bit of the oddities in terms of weather? We had that crazy conditions in the first of the three match days in the Sheep Leaves Cup, where basically, you know, you had a 40-mile-an-hour gusting wind behind one team, so all the goals went up one way. You and I, not to say we froze ourselves through the second leg, and then you had 80 degrees on that third one down in Orlando, and then, yeah, weather has become fickle over the last few months, and but that's a crazy story.
Yeah, well, they did eventually go back out, and Lyon actually, believe it or not, dominated after they came out. Obviously, they needed to find an equaliser. They couldn't. The pitch was pretty soggy, to be fair. I think on another day, it probably would have been abandoned and they would have come back another day. But the problem was is that if the game had been postponed, they would have had to start from 0-0 from minute one, whereas actually what they should have done is they should have abandoned the game, played it the following night. It starts at the 58th minute, which is when the players went off the field, and PSG still continued to lead 1-0. That is the fairest way to do it. But apparently they didn't have the days available to replay the game, so they had to get it done. So not ideal, but it was PSG who won. It ended Lyon's domination of winning treble after treble after treble. So it'll be PSG that will be the most pleased of the two. Both teams go into the Women's Champions League next year. Lyon won the title, PSG finished second. So look, another fantastic season for Lyon, no doubt about that. But PSG had the nice little gold star next to their name by winning that French Cup on the last day of the French season. Germany, Wolfsburg won the domestic double. They dominated once again. I've no question or no doubt that they will be the favourites going into next season as well. They beat Bayern Munich in the German Cup final just a few days before the Champions League final. They won that one on penalties, but they continue to be a force. I don't know if you saw, JJ, they signed England goalkeeper Mary Earps this week.
I did, yeah. That's an interesting move, but the way that she's been going about her career right now, starting to get herself a little bit more further and further in with the England team, that might be the last ticking straw for her to grab one of those jerseys if they were to qualify for France next year.
Well, I think, you know, Mary's looking at this one. I think she's smart. You know, she knows that she might not play that many games. You know, they have Almut Schultz, who's one of the best goalkeepers in the world. But Mary Earps is going to one of the best clubs in the world. She's going to be training with some of the best players in the world every day. That is only going to improve her as a goalkeeper. She signed a 12-month contract. If she only spends a year in Wolfsburg and then comes back to England or goes to another European club or the NWSL or wherever it might be, she will be a better player. There is no question of that whatsoever. I understand that game environment is always the best place to develop as a player, but how much work, genuinely, week on week, other than your games against Bayern Munich and Frankfurt and Sand and to be in a Potsdam, how much work does Almut Schultz have to do on a week-to-week basis? I'm not saying she doesn't have any saves to make, but she might not be as busy as someone who plays in a lower league team. Now, Mary Earps is going to be in that situation where she is going to be training against Pernilla Harder and Carolina Hansen. You know, there is going to be some really classy players that she's going to have to try and stop shots from, and I think it's a really good move for her, so I really do wish her well. Another English player on the move, Ennio Luca, has signed for Juventus. They, of course, won the Italian league. They'll be playing Champions League football next year. Good move for her. Obviously, she left Chelsea. Chelsea have lost a number of players over the off-season already. Claire Rafferty will be moving on. Katie Chapman has retired. Ennio Luca has obviously moved on. Becky Spencer will be leaving the club as well, goalkeeper. So going to be changes all over the place, mate. Caroline Weir's gone to Manchester City, along with Lauren Hemp has also gone to Manchester City as well. Lots of moves all over the place, mate. But I want to finish off the newsy part of the podcast over in your neck of the woods in the United States, because this week it was announced that ESPN will take on 6 live broadcasts for Game of the Week. Now, it's probably best you give the details, mate, because you will understand the broadcast landscape over there better than I will.
Yeah, so, I mean, for those who don't know, this is the second year of Lifetime, or, you know, part of the A&E Networks family, that has shown a Game of the Week listed on a Saturday afternoon, starts, you know, the broadcast window starts at 3 o'clock or 3:30, I should say, with a 20-minute pregame show. Then they show whatever that game of the week is, and it goes unopposed against, you know, the other three matches in the league that would be happening on the weekend. Then all of a sudden ESPN comes in and picks up a handful of those matches. And now you're, you know, for those who aren't on this side of the pod, you're asking yourself, well, what's the big deal about it? Well, ESPN is still the leading presenter in sports programming in the United States. They've got a number of different networks. They have a number of different platforms, including this very recent opening of a digital platform called ESPN Plus, where it's a little bit of a pay-per-view type subscription, a monthly subscription. But the main reason why it becomes a player in this is because on that network right now is every broadcast shown for Major League Soccer and the second professional division in the United States on the men's side. Now, where this thing could get a little bit interesting here, and actually for those who follow or are good friend Jonathan Tannenwald, he actually put out a piece earlier on the day of recording that kind of broke down things a little bit more. I had an opportunity to speak with both representatives from the A&E networks as well as representatives for the NWSL, and why this move is so, you know, why could it change the landscape of things? Because you had Lifetime, A&E Networks has a pretty vested interest in the league. But why all of a sudden would they give up the total exclusive rights to give ESPN, you know, their family of networks, the games will be shown on ESPN News. Why would they give up six matches? And actually, those matches are going to be in prime time as opposed to in the middle of the afternoon, where that's been a big point. You know, look no further than last year, Rachel Daly collapsing. Time networks would not move their game slot because they are a traditional family programming network where they always show a movie at 6 o'clock. So lots of interesting moves coming up here, and I think it's not only going to be changing the way that the NWSL is going to be broadcasting their games this year, but it's going to be big for the ones going forward, because, you know, who knows what the like the lifetime of Go 90, how that's going to run. Could the league move all their digital games onto the ESPN Plus? Could Lifetime be done and dusted after next year when the three-year contract runs out? We don't know, but it's definitely going to be interesting.
How, not how many people, because that would be a ridiculous question, but how large a portion of people are going to be affected by the move to ESPN? Because my understanding is not everyone has ESPN News, which is the channel it will be shown on, whereas everyone has access to Lifetime, and they also have access to, over here, we have obviously NWSLsoccer.com, which will continue to be the case. So everyone outside of the United States will have access to these games, but not everyone in the United States will have access to them.
Yeah, you're right. Obviously, the international party wins out big time because there's going to be no changes whatsoever. Look, there is a little bit of a concern, because as you said, not every channel has ESPN News. It's not ESPN News. It's not the main two channels that ESPN has. It's ESPN and ESPN2, and then there's a litany of other channels that's within the family of networks. Those are on the standard cable, you know, platform, same thing as Lifetime. My thing is, and I know people are going to say, well, sure, you're always going to have that classic sports network versus a non-traditional sports network promoting the game. I just look at it this way. ESPN, if your league is on there and you have a better contract, because the NWSL back in 2014 had three regular season matches and the postseason on that network. I think now both sides are in a better position to have the matches over there. And sure, you might not have as many people coming to watch, but if you're a sports fan, Kieran, most people are going to have the channel already, or you're going to have a way to find a way to get it, whether it's through legal or by other means of finding the channel. I think this move is for the best. I mean, the ratings haven't been terrible, but they haven't been great already for that 3:30 in the afternoon spot on Saturday. I would rather take a 7 o'clock, and also, let's face it, the attendance for the games aren't exactly doing well because it is hot in the middle of the summer here in the United States. It does not matter where you go to, it is going to be warm in the afternoon versus a evening match, which tends to have better attendance in the stadium. So I think it's a win-win for all sides.
Okay. That was a good overview. I've heard and read that people much prefer, not just because of the weather, but people just generally prefer to have a Saturday evening game. So that will no doubt work out in people's favour. It doesn't necessarily work out internationally because the 3:30 lifetime game is 8:30 in the evening over here, which is the earliest that we get when we're watching NWSL. But it's not about us, it's about the league, and it's about the safety of the players first and foremost. And it's good that ESPN are willing to give a big platform as well, which is really important. So good move for the league, and hopefully it will work out well with ESPN and we might see something bigger moving forwards. JJ, any kind of takes from, before we move on to the second half of the pod, any major takes from the NWSL? Obviously North Carolina Courage are absolutely steaming away in that division, still unbeaten at the time of recording, and even when half their team are missing through international duty, they're still able to pick up points as they did against Houston last week. They, well, I mean, who's going to stop them is the question, I guess.
Nope, I've literally got no answers for him. Yeah, I think it's really going to be that perfect storm of a bad day for North Carolina, a perfect day for somebody else, one or two calls going in the right favor, and maybe trying to take the Courage out of their usual mindset. Because let's face it, that championship match last year between them and Portland was a pretty, well, really rough and tumble contest from start to finish. North Carolina were the best team last year. They're the best team this year right now. I'm not surprised by them. I'm not really surprised by the top five, for that matter. Maybe a little bit of the positioning, but when there's 3 points between second and fifth right now, between Seattle and Chicago, I think that's fine. I'm a little surprised that Denise Reddy hasn't been sacked yet in New Jersey. You never want to call for things like that, but when you have 1 point out of nine matches, Kieran, what's going on down there? I mean, it truly shows that, well, whatever happened under Christy Holly is remained to be seen. He got the best out of that group, and outside of, sure, you say Sam Kerr, okay, that's a difference maker. You have Carly Lloyd on your team, and he got 1 point from nine matches. That's mind-blowing.
Yeah, I mean, I had fears for Sky Blue coming into the new season. I just think that there's such a lack of balance in that team. Far too many forwards on the roster and not enough depth at the back, and I think they were always going to struggle. But I don't know, maybe they're going to give Denise Reddy a little bit longer, and she needs a win, no doubt about that whatsoever. I mean, we've seen teams struggle from the start of the season where they've gone, you know, a run of fixtures without a win, and all of a sudden you hear the coach is no longer there. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see. I do want to give some love to the Houston Dash though, mate, because let's be frank, no one gave them a prayer at the start of the season, and they're sitting pretty just outside the playoffs, and they've got a lot more points than probably people expected them to at this stage.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, whatever Virepaugh has been working on, it's clearly gotten things going. Players that, you know, I don't think we should say players that we didn't expect a lot to, or we have kind of had over expectations for that. They're starting to perform. Rachel Daly has come on, done nice job. Obviously, it's been inspiring to see Keelia Ohai back in the setup and starting to find her way back into things. But yeah, no, it's the playoff race, as it has been the last couple of years, for spots 3 and 4, I think are going to be just as interesting, because there's still going to be a lot of fighting up until the last couple of weeks of the season. But as you said at the top when we briefly touched on it, no one's going to beat North Carolina. Seattle's done a nice job getting themselves in the second place. But, yeah, I think this year runs through Kerry.
Yeah. No, we'll see. We'll see. Definitely Houston deserves some praise. And God wish Christy Mewis good luck with her recovery from an ACL injury as well. She's been on the podcast a few times and obviously went down last week, and that's her season done. So I really do wish her well. But I think you're right, you know. And they've also signed today Claire Polkinghorne, Australian international. So very, very shrewd signing, that one. I really rate Claire. Had a very good W League season with Brisbane, and we know that she's played in this league before with the Portland Thorns, so it's not going to be alien to her. But yeah, big love to the Houston Dash and to the league in general. And you know, still plenty of time to go and still plenty of points to play for. But a break this weekend, of course, because the United States play China in Utah and in Cleveland, I think, is the other game. So I would say we would cover those games in the next pod, but we're not having one. So people will have to tune in to another podcast to maybe get an update and a review of those two games. But we'll have a little break, JJ, and then I think we will do a little bit of reminiscing and to answer some questions that came in our way.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So, we've mentioned it countless times on social media. We've already mentioned it a few times on this podcast. This is the last show that we'll be doing for Women's Soccer Zone. I promise you, this is the last one. We're not going to change our minds. We're not going to do another one. After 5 years, the podcast is coming to a close. The outlet is coming to a close. And I guess this is an opportunity, JJ, to maybe talk about some of our highlights. In fact, a lot of people on Twitter asked us about highlights. But I guess one of the questions I had from someone, and I think, you know, a few people would like to know, is what next for you, for me? What's kind of on the agenda for you? You've got a job, as we know, so it's not like this is the end or it earns you any money. But women's soccer, you've actually got some good stuff going on in a job that you've picked up, which you probably should tell people about.
Yeah, so I mean, if you all follow me on, well, probably almost everyone who's a listener of the Women's Soccer Zone podcast has followed me on Twitter, but if you haven't already, you might as well join the party, because it's a fun old time over there at JJDuke21. But yeah, no, for the remainder of the season, which will run through the back end of July, so it's a very short-term media project for me, but I've joined forces with the second division United Women's Soccer. That's what they call Pro-Am League. It's basically kind of it's a summer league, if you will. It's about a 3 month long season, give or take, where it's an NCAA compliant league where it allows current collegiate athletes to play alongside with former collegiate athletes, foreign or current professional players. So I'm going to be doing things over the communications office with them. It's a lot of writing, a lot of releases that I got to put together. But good folks over there. It's been a few years since I've been back in the because I was thinking about it, Kieran. Last job that I had was in 2015 with a minor league baseball team. Really didn't have to worry about Instagram a whole lot. Yeah, that's a thing now. That's like an extra level that you have to, like, oh, right, yeah, I've got to do, you know, the website, email the press, email everybody else, Facebook, Twitter, and now you got Instagram too. Man, that is a lot of work. But yeah, no, so that's where I'm going to be for the next, 5-6 weeks or so. That's in addition to my broadcasting work for a lot of different colleges and my work at MLB.com. But in terms of women's soccer after that, yeah, that's a big question mark right now. So I'm not worried about that right now, because I'm someone that kind of just focuses on the present. And hey, if there's any outlet that ever wants my expertise on anything, granted, I don't really know what it is, but hey, if you want something, I could probably help y'all out. I'd love to do something for the next World Cup, but we shall, we'll see. But like I said, I'm looking forward to doing the work that I have right now, and stay tuned. Things could always change.
Hey, there's a lot of knowledge there, mate, to offer. So any outlets that are interested definitely should snap you up. I'll tell you that now. From my side, I will continue to freelance. I will continue to write. Obviously, I do a lot of stuff over here in the UK. I'm still a member of the NWSL Media Association. I still write for The Equaliser. So, you know, other than Women's Soccer Zone stopping, not a lot changes for me, to be honest with you. So I will continue to try and do what I can to promote the women's game, and that's why we do it. You know, that's why JJ and I both do it. You know, we don't really earn any very little money out of being involved in the game. So there does come a time, and this is one of the reasons Women's Soccer Zone's got to shut down, is because ultimately after 5 years it's not earned us a penny. We have to think about time, we have to think about finances, and ultimately it's not maybe worked out or ended the way I would have liked it. You know, it would have been nice to get a sponsor on board or something like that, but you know, the women's football industry is small and it can be sometimes difficult. But for me, definitely we'll be continuing to cover the game. Far too invested in it, far too fond of it to walk away. But Women's Soccer Zone, unfortunately, will be no more. But JJ, do you want to take some questions?
That, yeah, might as well. It sounds like we've gotten a fair few.
Got a few,
of them, so
yeah, not
might
loads.
As well entertain.
Not loads, but we got a few. So Mark Williams, he's a mate of mine who follows England everywhere. I have to say, big respect to Mark. He is a proper diehard England fan. Follows them home and away. Got a lot of time for Mark. He asked, "What was the most favourite game to cover, and who was your favourite interviewee?"
That's a tough one in terms of live games to cover because with a lot of my work, I didn't have as many opportunities to actually go out and cover a lot of matches live. But I think the ones, Kieran, that actually stood out to me was, it's not for the Women's Soccer Zone podcast, but this was back with Our Game magazine that I used to work for. It was 2014 CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers. It was when Costa Rica qualified for the first time in a penalty shootout over Trinidad in what was a very wild matchup. And Kieran, I saw and talked to the players afterwards. I know you work, you know, in England. It's not an expectation that they get there, but they've been there before. To see players for a country qualify for the biggest event in their sport for the first time, that is something that truly, like, I cherished watching that happen in front of me because it meant so much to those people, whether it was the team, whether it was the backroom staff, whether it was the small supporting unit that came out to that match. Actually, funny enough, for the championship match, a lot more Costa Rican supporters all of a sudden came out in a match that actually meant nothing because both them and the United States were already going through anyways. But, that was fun. That was a lot of fun.
And what about favorite interviewee?
Actually, first off, I have to amend that quick. They beat Mexico in that game. It was Mexico that then beat Trinidad in the next one. I had to switch that one up there for a second. Favorite interviewee, probably for this podcast, just on the form that she had at that time, Sam Kerr, sitting down with her for 15, 20 minutes. It wasn't just the standard answers. You know, Sam will give you a little something, there's always a little bit of flair with it, right? You know, she doesn't hold any punches back, but yeah, she's a real fun interview.
Yeah, no, definitely. And that was quite recent, so there's definitely, and I will say this, you know, we may be shutting down the podcast, but the page will still be available. So if people do want to go listen to old podcasts, you will be able to do that. I'll give you the web address at the end of the show. For me, favourite game to cover was definitely Euro 2017 final last year between Holland and Denmark. I mean, the game itself was phenomenal and the atmosphere in Enschede was like nothing I've seen anywhere else. So that was definitely the game that I enjoyed covering most. And then interviewee, I knew I'd get asked this, but I find it so difficult because I've interviewed hundreds over the last 5 years and it makes it really difficult to kind of pick one. And they all stand out for one reason or another. You know, I really enjoyed interviewing Caroline Stanley for the website because she'd just been released from her contract. She was a free agent and she had no idea where she was going. And she spoke so openly and so passionately about loving the game, but how it had let her down a little bit in that she'd kind of, you know, come to a standstill and had no idea what her next move was going to be. You know, that for the podcast, I mean, I interviewed Kelly Smith in her back garden. You know, that was fun. That was on the first year anniversary of the Women's Football Podcast. Megan Rapinoe was the first US international I interviewed. I find it really difficult to pick one. Heather O'Reilly was always a pleasure in the last 18 months in the time that she was playing in England. You know, it's really, really difficult. I think sometimes the lower profile ones are sometimes the most fun because you know what you're going to get from the likes of Pino and Kelly Smith. They're pros. They know what they want to say. They know exactly how they want the interview to go. It's sometimes the players that you don't necessarily think about that much or don't necessarily get in the limelight that much. I mean, we did a great interview of Amanda Frisby. You know, Amanda, the first year, 2 years of her career, she had real injury problems. You know, she got pretty down and wasn't sure if her career was going to work out the way that it has. And, you know, she did a really good interview for the show. I really enjoyed interviewing Amanda. And it's so difficult, though. So, so difficult. I appreciate the time that every single player has given us over the last 5 years. I genuinely mean that because You know, they are now more in demand. There is no doubt about that, and they can be a little bit more selective about the media outlets that they speak to. So I am always appreciative of when a player stops to give you that time. Ada Hegerberg, always a pleasure to interview. You know, very, very articulate young woman at 22 who has the world at her feet at the moment. It's so difficult to pick just one. So I'm going to have to dodge that question a little bit. Sorry, Mark, and sorry to everyone else who asked that question.
Well, you kind of answered a little bit. You gave a few.
I gave a few. Yeah, I can't pick one. I can't pick one. It's really, really difficult. The guy who I'm just going to read the question out for as well, Jamie Sherwood, is always a good guy to interview as well. What is your favourite moment whilst covering the women's game?
Well, the favorite moment, I think, as a whole, Kieran, was probably the Euros last year. Obviously, I'm based stateside, didn't get to go, but watching that tournament, I mean, we've seen Euros in the past few, you know, editions now are starting to grow, but I think really, I don't want to say for the first time, but I think really the tournament was encapsulated by, you know, how great the support was in that tournament, how strong the football was on the field. And obviously it helped that, you know, the host country ended up, you know, taking that country by storm, winning the whole thing. But I think as a whole, that moment was probably the most fun for me. And we also, as we've said before in a couple previous podcasts, we did a hell of a job covering that thing. That was by far, I don't care if I cover this sport for another 10 years or so, that project was probably the most fun I've ever had.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that's one that we can both agree on. I loved covering the Euros last year, both out in Holland from home, doing the preview guide that we did, which I think was unrivaled. I think we put a piece of work out there that had 3-4 months worth of planning going into it. We had 10 writers from all over the world, you know, with yourself and Anne from Australia, and you know, then we had people from all over Europe. We found, you know, someone from Russia, which I never thought we'd do. You know, that piece of work was a lot of fun. It was hard work and a lot of late nights, especially for Anne. I will say that she was an absolute trooper laying it all out, but that Euros was unreal. And to be able to cover it from start to finish and to be able to go to Holland and see firsthand how the Dutch people responded to their team winning, that was unforgettable for me, and that was definitely my favourite moment in terms of the time that I ran Women's Soccer Zone. Jay's also asked, who was your most challenging interview? I have to be honest, I find that quite difficult, because I don't know what he means by challenging. If he means difficult, I can honestly say that very few players have been difficult. In terms of challenging, I think the most challenging ones for me are always those that maybe you don't know that much about and you have to maybe do a little bit more research on. But I don't know if you've got one, mate, that stands out.
Yeah, not really. I think if there's ever a challenge, it might just be, you know, catching players. And there's never going to be like one, like, oh, I remember player X was god-awful to interview. I think it's just more sometimes when you catch players, whether it's coming off of a tough match or, you know, for me going to cover the NWSL draft where you have a lot of young players that really, you know, that became a profile event where, you know, you're kind of deer in the headlights almost. You sometimes almost lose yourself and forget what to say at sometimes. So I don't think it's ever really, I don't ever had like a challenging interview, Kieran. I think it was just kind of along in the same lines of what you said. There are just some moments that are kind of tough for the players to really get that you don't just, you almost kind of scrap the audio and say, okay, well, you know, that just didn't work. We'll get the next one.
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember interviewing Julian Dix. Julian Dix took over West Ham Ladies a few years ago for a very short spell, and it was an interview that I did alongside Ellen White. Ellen White guested on the show and helped me present it, and we interviewed Julian Dix, and that wasn't the easiest because you could tell that Julian wasn't that knowledgeable about the women's game, and ultimately he was clearly using it as a stepping stone to get into the men's game, because that's what eventually happened. But that was probably the most challenging and most difficult, because you're interviewing someone who doesn't really know much about the women's game, and that can make it quite difficult. So that would probably be one that was more challenging. Robin Cowan, who works for the BBC. I love Robin. She's a great woman, great broadcaster, and does a really, really great job for both men and women's football. She asked, how far away are the England women's football team from winning either a European Championship or World Cup? What needs to be done to help them take the final step? I'm still not entirely convinced they're there just yet. You want to answer that one first, mate?
I mean, you're probably the best person to answer that question, but I will give it certainly a shot. With this group, Kieran, I don't want to say their best chance, and I'm talking with this very current group that they have. I think their best chance to have won something was that Euros. I think they had everything going for them, but that's not to say that they're very far away. They are very close to getting a major title. It's going to be curious to see, and this is, again, we're kind of over-speculating, but it would be shocking if they don't qualify for the World Cup. It'd just be curious to see the route that they got there, because in Canada, they got a couple of bounces that went their way. Obviously, they didn't get the one that they needed to get to the final. But my understanding is the youth coming through very strong. Seeing how some of the other programs are going right now, I think if it's not going to be that past cycle, it's going to be the one coming up where they're going to get over the proverbial hump and, lift a major trophy.
Yeah. Well, England are bidding for the European Championships for 2021, and I think they have a fantastic chance of winning it anyway. But I think if they win that bid and host the competition, I will happily go on record as saying I think England will start that tournament as favourites, and I think they'll go and win it. I think that they have an unbelievable wealth of talent now. They have a pool of players to pick from that is bigger than ever. You look at the players that have gone to Russia for the World Cup qualifiers and the players that are out injured or the players that are starting to make a name for themselves. You look at the players that are coming through the youth system. Someone like Lauren Hemp, who we mentioned earlier, 17 years old, has got a move to Manchester City, was phenomenal for Bristol City this season. She's still a kid, essentially, if we're being honest. There are really good young players coming through, and they now have a pathway with fantastic facilities to help them along the way to become established internationals. And now we have the professional Women's Super League starting from this autumn. You know, those players are going to have more time on the ball, more contact time, more access to facilities than they've ever had. And I think England go into the World Cup next year, should they qualify, which they should do. I think they go into the World Cup next year as one of the favourites, which has never happened before. But I genuinely think, Robin, that 2021, I think England will start as favourites for the Euros. And if they get to host it, I think in front of the home fans, they could repeat what Holland did. I think they could go on and win the whole thing. But maybe that's just me being optimistic. But I think they have a great chance. And in terms of what they might need to do to try and achieve that, I don't know. I think England have the opportunity and the capability to really hurt teams. And I'm not sure how much they hurt teams at the moment. They need to score more goals. I think they're pretty solid at the back. They've got enough strikers to hurt teams, and they've got enough quality to hurt teams. Now they need to be a little bit more ruthless. And I think Phil Neville said that himself. So just a few more, JJ. Jacob Cristobal, good friend of mine. Kieran versus JJ in PKs. Who wins?
Sorry, I'm winning that easy.
Well,
not even trying.
You're a goalkeeper, and I'm an outfield player. So, I'm confident that I could save yours, but I'm also not that confident that I'd score past you.
Yeah, surprisingly, from inside the box, I'm not too bad in my own right with the feet. It's kind of the whole running thing that beats me up, because I've got bad knees from catching. But the finishing isn't a problem. So, yeah, sorry, Jacob, that's going to be out of a best of 5-3-1, mate. I save 3 of yours, you miss one, you score one.
Do you know what, mate? When we meet up next, we're gonna put that one to the test, and then we'll report back.
Well, didn't he actually referee some sort of a taco eating contest? Maybe we could set this up where he comes out, we get a camera, meet somewhere in New York, and we'll settle this once and for all.
Okay. All right, we'll see. Yes, I saw the taco eating contest. Absolutely cracked me up. Okay, so Denise Duffy asked a few questions, and I'm just going to have to try and pick out probably the most
relevant. She asked one about basketball, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's the Marist WBB one, yeah?
Okay, yeah, well, you'd know better than I would.
Yeah, that's mid-major college basketball. I cracked up when I saw that. I'll answer this right now. Denise, yes? Is that who asked the question?
Yeah.
Yeah, when are they going to win the MAC? I give it about 2 more years. Quinnipiac's still very good right now, but once Trish gets that group graduated, yeah, Brian will be back on top.
Absolutely, so, hijacking.
You have no idea what I'm talking about.
Hijacking
okay.
A women's soccer podcast with women's basketball. How dare you? Okay, so I think probably the most relevant one that she asked was, what can women's soccer pro leagues learn from other sports?
That's a good question, actually. Not to say that there are many different cases, because I think right now, at least this is going to be me speaking on the American side and obviously the NWSL side, and you could probably chime in with some of your own thoughts from the WSL. I think it's really going to come down to, Kieran, they've got to stop selling to dads and daughters, and they've got to sell it to the sports fan. Because if I want to go attend a match as a fan, not to say that I want to go there to have a good time and whatnot, because I'm obviously going there for, you know, the game, but I'm going to have a couple of beers and, you know, enjoy, you know, being there. Where I think, like, here, there's still that kind of fight a little bit where, you know, are they ready to go out and promote it at, you know, to the everyday sports fan? I think that's where they're kind of lacking right now. I think it can happen. I think it's just going to be the respective leagues to kind of take the onus upon themselves to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I've become frustrated over and over with the marketing towards young girls all the time. You have to market to them, of course you do, because they're the future. They're the ones that are potentially going to be pulling on a shirt somewhere down the line. But there is a real kind of lack of direct marketing towards boys and men, if you want me to be honest. I, as a 35-year-old male, don't think I've ever seen any form of advertising that appeals to me when it comes to women's football. So I think there is something that they really need to look at in terms of how other leagues market their product to a male audience and try and pick up some learning. It's getting better, though. I will say that. I mean, I've followed women's football since 2009 and it's getting a lot better. No doubt about that whatsoever when you look at the diversity within the crowds. So I completely agree with you. I think, you know, looking at ways to market the game, the professionalism is getting better. So that is obviously something that they've picked up and liaise with other leagues and other sports over. So I don't think there's a huge amount that they can learn, but definitely the marketing and how they get more of a diverse audience through is something that I'd like to see. A couple more, mate. Craig Hadley, who runs his own podcast now, which focuses on Birmingham City Ladies. So if you're looking for a podcast and you're a Birmingham City Ladies fan, definitely check out Craig's podcast. Craig's Twitter handle is at Craig Hadley. Hadley spelled H-A-D-L-E-E. He asked, what was the biggest challenge you faced when you started Women's Soccer Zone and how did you overcome it? I guess I'll have to answer that one, won't I?
Yeah.
Biggest challenge, I think it was making sure we had people on side and making sure that we were seen as a respectable and a professional outlet, because there is definitely a stigma attached to podcasts, or certainly there used to be. I think they're making a comeback again after initially hitting the scene, maybe the mid-2000s. I think when people heard that you run a podcast, it was like you're just a fan who's decided to start something and you just talk, you know, to be honest, you talk shit about stuff you don't know about. Whereas actually, you know, I'm a qualified journalist, you're a qualified journalist. I think we wanted people to know that we had a knowledge and that we were offering a product that would give something to people that didn't exist, because there was no, certainly in the UK, there was no podcast dedicated to women's football. And that's why I started in the first place, because I wanted to fill that gap. And that's one of the reasons I'm stopping it, because that gap doesn't exist anymore. There are some good women's football podcasts out there now. I still think ours was the best, but I think that the biggest challenge was making sure that we had the acceptance of the industry. And I think we did that, because We got accreditation for pretty much anything that we wanted in terms of tournaments and matches week on week, the NWSL draft. You know, never any questions asked us about who are you or what is it, you know, what is your purpose of wanting to attend. We pretty much got accreditation for anything that we wanted. But we had hurdles, no doubt about that. That, you know, when you're going into speak to requesting interviews with players of clubs that you've never dealt with before, there may well be those people that don't know who you are, and you have to sell yourself and sell your product and make sure that they understand what it is that you're going to do that benefits them. And I think we're able again to do that, because if you look at, I should have done a tally up and I started to do it, but if you look at the players that we interviewed, they come from a number of countries. I think the last count I did a few years ago, we'd interviewed players from over 20 countries. So to be able to do that, I think shows that we made our mark, but it didn't certainly come without its challenges. I don't know if you've got any challenges that you faced, JJ, in the time you
were. Well, I think it's Kieran, to kind of add to that a little bit. It's not, when you started the podcast and when you brought me on board, to varying levels of degree, we weren't, you know, like you said earlier, we weren't just people that are sitting in our, you know, sitting at our homes and, you know, kind of bashing about things. We worked hard at trying to get to where we are today. I mean, it didn't come from the fact that we're not getting funding from somebody. We're funding pretty much all of our own trips on our, I mean, you fly to the United States, what, one or two times a year, you're going all over the continental Europe. And I mean, people, you know, still here in America, I couldn't tell you one person that truly covers the game that gets paid and lives a life, you know, off of just making that our own. We, and this is no secret, people know that, you know, we basically have to cover and fund ourselves if we want to go to these places. But when we do that, we earn the respect of those who run the communications or PR departments. They're not just, you know, as you said, treating us like, you know, even if we get in, well, what's your purpose of being here? They're looking out for us and looking after for us, making sure that we get what we, you know, what we're looking for on the day. They're not going to, you know, pave the road for us, but they're going to make sure that, you know, if we're coming all this distance and we're going to be doing something and they believe in our product, that, you know, things are going to work out more often than not. I think that's kind of a testament, and obviously to you, because everybody knows, Kieran, that you're, you know, if there's a level that's set and you up that level, especially in coverage in England, I mean, it's tough to compete. And I don't think anybody can really go and do and say that they did what you did. And that's where, you know, that respect, you know, they say sometimes respect needs to be earned, but people recognize where that respect comes from. And I think because of the work that you put in and the little bit of work that I put in as well, I think that's where people are like, okay, well, these guys are here. You know, they're not just screwing around. They're here to do a job. And, you know, we'll do whatever that we can to help them. So, yeah, I think that those were the challenges. It didn't come easy, obviously, because we all had to start from somewhere else. And I think that's kind of the thing that also for anyone else that's looking to get into, you know, soccer journalism or anything of those types, there's going to be hard days, but if you keep plugging away at it and keep representing yourself to the best of your abilities, and I apologize if this gets a little preachy, but, you know, things will work out. It just, you know, it doesn't just happen overnight.
Yeah, I second that completely, 100%. I think JJ said some really important things there, that if you want to get into the industry, and it's a question that I get asked quite a lot, you have to work hard. You have to be prepared to do some free work, and you have to be professional. You know, that those are the three key things that I think are going to make you successful in this industry, because the industry doesn't pay a lot, if anything, with depending on who you're able to pitch to and who you're able to convince to publish your work. But as long as you are professional, as long as you build a knowledge as well, I will say this about players. Players are happy to speak to you, but they are frustrated if they are speaking to someone who doesn't know anything about them or about the game. You know, that is, I've seen it so many times with journalists who rock up to a game because they've probably been sent by their editor. They probably cover men's football more than they do the women's game. They've probably never been to a women's game before. They ask questions that I know if a player could, they would probably roll their eyes and walk off if they could. So build a knowledge. Make sure you know who it is that you're speaking to. Make sure you know your stuff, because if you do, you will earn respect for that, no doubt about that whatsoever. And I'm not going to preach, but those are just some tips that I would give people if they're looking to break into the industry. I want to finish up, JJ. Last question. I quite like this one from Chloe, who asked the question, whilst you are shutting down, what do you hope will happen for independent media in women's football? What would you like to see happen?
You mind taking this one first, actually, there, bud?
Yeah, I can take it first. I mean, I think, Chloe, women's football relies a lot on independent media because independent media is where the knowledge is. You know, the reality is that the game is not as global as we would like it to be. I think access is a problem. We have access to the NWSL, of course, but I can only maybe watch one Frauen Bundesliga game a week that is broadcasted on the DFB website. If I want to watch the Swedish league, I have to pay for it. French league is very difficult to access unless it's a big game between Lyon and PSG. So mainstream media will rock up for big games. Mainstream media will cover big stories, but mainstream media will not necessarily be sat in a press box on a Saturday or Sunday. So you are looking at independent media, and there are a lot of them in the women's game, because as JJ has already outlined, you don't necessarily get paid. There's not a huge amount of coverage of the women's game in mainstream media. So clubs and national teams as well rely on independent media to get their messages out there, to get their players out there, to get the news out there. So my hope is that independent media continues to be an important mainstay of the game. Definitely mainstream media is increasing. We've seen that in the UK with the BBC and BT Sport. National newspapers are taking more of an interest, especially with Phil Neville coming on board with the England team. We're getting more coverage over here. But independent media is massive in my view. And I look at the NWSL, for example. The NWSL Media Association is probably 40 to 50 journalists that are members. It might even be more than that now. I haven't counted recently. The vast majority of those are made up of journalists that work for independent media. And I think the NWSL Media Association has some of the most knowledgeable soccer journalists that I encounter without question. And the vast majority of those don't work for mainstream media. So I think that says a lot. Mainstream media has a place without doubt in terms of reach, in terms of encouraging people to come on board. We need mainstream media. My friend Joe Curry, who works for the BBC, Tom Gary, who works for the BBC, you know, phenomenal journalists who are massive for the women's game in England. Then you've got people like Jen O'Neill, who works for She Kicks magazine, which is an independent media form, you know, the best resource for women's football in England, bar none. So you need that combination of the two, but definitely I think the knowledge comes from independent media. So my hope is that it continues to be a mainstay and people continue to support it, because the moment they turn their back and turn to mainstream media, yes, you will have an outlet that gets more reach and maybe broadcast to more people, but you don't necessarily get the knowledge that comes with it.
Yeah, and I think maybe to add to that a little bit as well, you know, there's been at least at times a nice connection with the people that are involved with the mainstream media that look to folks that work in the independent for their knowledge. And, you know, maybe it might not be one of those where it's like, well, get us up to speed with a crash course. These are people on the mainstream side that are, you know, coming in already with a background, but, you know, they're the ones that don't come in all high and mighty and look down on people. They're the ones that can coexist, if you will. And, help each other out in putting together a good product. And I think, yeah, mainstream media, as this sport continues to progress, and let's be fair, you're talking, Kieran, about the fact that, you know, the NWSL shows matches, you know, the WSL, they're getting better and having, especially for an international fan base, getting some. If we even go back 5 years ago, we wouldn't really have been much talking about this. Let's be remembered that WPS, which was the last league here in the United States, had one game a week that was shown on television on the Fox Soccer Channel. That was it. I mean, you had to go to Twitter, which was also kind of a new-ish type of social media, for all the other updates and the other games that were going on. So it's come a, I don't want to say it's come a long way, but it certainly has come a way since, you know, technology has really started to become more advanced and allows, you know, people from, you know, Anno Dong, who's able to stay up at all hours of the morning to watch Portland Thorns play soccer. You know, that's it's crazy to think about, even 10 years ago, that that could happen. There's still a ways to go, but if things keep progressing the way that they do, and I try to be more of a positive type of guy as opposed to a pessimist, but I think the way that things are going, it will continue to improve. Independent media, important. Advances with technology to continue showing the game, important. Utilize the social media tools that are out there. WSL did a great job in getting games on Facebook. I love that, because not only the fact that I could watch live, but I can go back and watch those games where I never had the chance to watch, you know, some of those teams just a couple of seasons ago. Use social media to further enhance your promotion of the sport, and I think things will be all right.
Oh, it was nice that you mentioned the WPS there, mate. I remember staying up late watching Kelly Smith and Alex Scott for Boston Breakers on that awful Harvard pitch with the lines all over the place. And I was like, I'd never seen
way,
that before.
Harvard
I'd
Stadium's
never seen that before.
A little bit of a facelift,
I'd
way.
Never seen it before. That was like the first time I'd seen football played on a pitch like that with lines all over the place. I didn't know when the ball had gone out for a throw in. It was absolutely crazy. So it was nice that you... nice that you mentioned that, because I remember staying up and watching that thinking, oh my God, what the hell is this? But
yeah. The stadium, by the way, is going to be getting a little bit of a facelift coming up. So it's gonna look a little bit more modern. I think the lines, though, for the most part, is going to be staying. So sorry about that.
Oh, no way. Get rid of the
hey,
lines.
Hey, remember, I broadcast for Yale, so I have to find a way to slide them. It's part of the job.
Good stuff, mate. Well, look, I think that is probably enough, if you want me to be honest. Thank you so much to all those that have tuned in or downloaded over the last 5 years. We are incredibly grateful for anyone that downloaded a show or commented on a tweet or made a recommendation or read the website, whatever you may have done, or any engagement or interaction you had with Women's Soccer Zone. Really, really do appreciate it. We're stopping because we feel we have to, rather than maybe wanting to. I think there's definitely now more coverage of the game, as we've discussed, that kind of makes it a little bit pointless for us to keep going. You know, there are plenty of outlets now for you to be able to gain your women's football news and views and opinions, and you don't need us crowding the market, for want of a better term. So thank you so much for all of your support over the last 5 years. Please do, as we've already said, continue to support independent media. They are vital for getting the messages out there for women's soccer and women's football, and continue to follow the game and support the players. You know, it's with more coverage comes more scrutiny, no doubt about that whatsoever, and as the game comes more professional, the expectation definitely rises. But continue to remain humble and continue to support the players, because there's still a long way to go for this game, no doubt about that. JJ, got any parting words, my friend?
Yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, I started doing this. Actually, I didn't even think I was going to be doing this, to be honest with you. I was summer RAing, which is a resident advisor at a college, watching the 2011 Women's World Cup and trying to practice a little bit. Started up a blog, and then all of a sudden I got a tweet from Tiffany Weimer saying, hey, do I want to come in a work on her project of Our Game magazine? Then here you go, 6+ years later, still covering it. It's for the players. There's so many great stories out there. Like you said, we do this just as an opportunity to share their stories, because, you know, while we have written a lot of stories and talked about a lot of players, there are still hundreds out there that we have not gotten to. It's not always the same national team players, which granted they deserve all the plaudits that they get, but there are so many good stories out there, so many good people that play in the game, so many good people that work within the game, continue to support them, support the folks that, you know, they're the ones that are getting up at, you know, God, early hours to go, you know, long distances to cover matches, support those people, because without them, we wouldn't, you know, as we had talked about the mainstream media versus independents, we still wouldn't have the avenues that we have because of those people. So keep going with them. Kieran and I aren't going to be going away anytime soon, but as he said, this is just, it's the time for us to step aside enjoyed the memories. Appreciate the folks that sent in the questions. And you did say that the links are going to remain open, yes, so that people can download the shows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll keep the Audio Boom page live. So if you go to audioboom.com/channel/WosoZone, I think is the URL, you will find all of the podcasts that we've done from the very beginning right up to this last one. So you can download them, you can listen to them online. So they won't be disappearing. The website, womenssoccerzone.com, I haven't quite decided what to do with that yet. That could remain open for a little while. The Twitter page, at WosoZone, will remain inactive. We'll keep it open. If people want to go back and look at tweets or find information out, then we'll keep that open, but it will be inactive. So thank you very much, guys. Thanks so much for the support over the last 5 years. We appreciate it. Continue to support women's football moving forward. And until next time, take care of yourselves and bye-bye.